Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KALW's weekly broadcast of all things culturally considered. I'm David Latulippe, the new-ish host for this show. As regular listeners know, Open Air was a creation and labor of love for our late senior announcer, Alan Farley, who asked me to fill in during his recent illness. I'm very honored that Alan subsequently entrusted me to the show's upkeep when he realized that he would not be returning to the airwaves, and I'll make every effort to be a good host. And having Alan as a mentor these many years will strive to bring his friendliness and a keen ear to the folks that I'll have in as guests. Last week, at an earlier hour of the day, we offered a live on-air tribute to Alan, which spread to 2 hours and featured many remembrances from listeners and friends. And I think it was extremely cathartic to all of us here at KALW. If you didn't have a chance to hear that broadcast, it's posted at kalw.org. And for those of you who are not on the computer fast track, give us a call here at our administrative line, 841-4121, and we'll see about getting you a CD copy. And for those who are not CD savvy, well, I'm sorry, 8-tracks and LPs just are not available. Last Saturday on West Coast Live, Sedge Thompson offered his tribute, and pianist Mike Greensill offered a Noel Coward medley. I'm very pleased that Mike and his partner in life and cabaret, Weslow Whitfield, will be part of the public celebration of Alan's life, which will take place on Monday, November 19th, in the green room of the Veterans Building on Van Ness Avenue, home of the Herbst Theater. In addition to Mike and Wesla, pianist Sarah Cahill, yours truly on flute, trumpeter, announcer, producer extraordinaire Eric Wayne, and some other musical guests are in the works. Food, drink, remembrances, in a celebratory, classy way, the way I think Alan would want it. That's Monday, November 19th from 5 to 8 p.m. It's free admission, but we are asking you to RSVP via our website, kalw.org, or by calling 415-841-4121, extension 3515. I'll give you some more of those details later on in this broadcast. For the loss of such a force of broadcasting, it seems like we here at KLW are at one of those stages of grieving, perhaps transitioning from shock to mourning, and I think to celebratory now, especially as we plan for the 19th. So today on Open Air, I thought I'd invite a few of Alan's regular cast of characters for this program, Peter Robinson, Ronald Chase, and Diane Keough, to share their associations and memories. But before we do, our executive news editor, Ben Trefney, has this special remembrance.
I have to admit, I never really understood it, but Alan Farley had a fascination with the multi-talented Noel Coward.
I went to a marvelous party. I must say the fun was intense. We all had to do what the people we knew might be doing 100 years hence. Can you beat it? We talked about...
I came across a book of his lyrics, and I thought maybe I can try and play a recording of every song that he ever wrote. So this started, this was the Songs of Noel Coward, which is a daily, a weekly half-hour program.
I couldn't have liked it more. I've been to a marvelous party.
In an interview with KALW's Neil Swinkles, Alan described his love for all things Coward.
And as it turned out, you know, I mean, there were like 256 songs in the book. A lot of them weren't recorded. But anyway, I did that program for over 4 years.
On KALW. You could say we were an enabler.
And in the process, got to meet people. I got in communication with the Coward Estate, went to England for the first time, was at the ceremony in Westminster Abbey where Noel Coward's memorial stone was unveiled in 1984. And that sort of snowballed ever since then.
Would you say it got out of hand, or...?
No.
Well, maybe. Alan was obsessed, but he was hardly a monomaniac. In fact, I think Alan liked pretty much everything that was mellifluous, which might be why he got into radio in the first place.
You mentioned radio, and that's one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was the quote, good old days of radio, unquote. Were they really?
Yes, they were marvelous.
That's Alan, talking with actor Vincent Price.
I think that if I were running an acting school, I would make every student work as hard at radio as at any other technique. The radio actor, and I did literally thousands of radio shows, you had to create everything. You know, I mean, you had to paint the scenery, you had to paint the face on the voice, and it was terribly exciting. And there was a group of actors in Hollywood and New York who were radio actors, who I think were some of the very best actors that America's ever produced, were radio people.
Radio people. They can create art out of radio.
You're listening to Radiolab.
This is 99% Invisible. I'm Roman Mars.
From WBEZ Chicago, it's This American Life, distributed by Public Radio International. Stay with us.
Alan Farley brought art into radio.
Welcome to Book Talk. This is Alan Farley, and this week, another visit with one of our favorite authors, one of our favorite mystery authors, one of our favorite people. Stay tuned.
Alan was sincerely excited for a lot of the things he got to do, like having the chance to talk with people he admired. He loved it, and they loved him back.
With me in the studio today is Baroness James of Holland Park, otherwise known as P.D. James, the novelist with her latest novel, Death in Holy Orders, another Adam Dalgliesh mystery. And welcome back to KALW.
It's lovely to be back, Alan.
Well, it's great to see you again. I'm so glad to read another one of your novels. I'm addicted to them.
Alan had the chance to talk with thousands of artists from around the Bay Area and all over the world. Some left a lasting impression, as he recalled in a 2006 conversation with KALW's Sandeep Roy.
When Salman Rushdie was here, this was still in the days when he had bodyguards, and they came out, I don't know whether it was that day or the day before, and checked out everything before he came. I was certainly impressed by that. yes, but the one thing I pride myself on is that I've never been intimidated by my guests. I just consider him the person another guest.
The list of those guests is remarkable. Conductor Michael Tilson Thomas, columnist Frank DeFord, and writer Kurt Vonnegut, with whom he shared a philosophy on life.
We used to be a compassionate people. I think it was important that we be compassionate, and because we decided that the Soviet Union was our enemy and the evil empire and all that, is compassion is suddenly discredited. And so we have a quite heartless society at the top. It's true of the lower levels of our society, but at the very top, at the top of corporations and at the top of the government, the people are mean as hell.
Well, it seemed like the last couple of administrations just sort of, I mean, that was almost their guiding principle.
Alan expressed his political opinions there, but it was a rare moment. He never wanted the conversation to be about him or his thoughts. He wasn't the star. He was the star's vehicle.
My main point, which I've said many times now, is the point of the interview is for me to shut up and to listen to what the guest has to say and then follow up what they say.
That's how Alan saw his work at KALW as well. He improvised. He just figured out how he could best fit in from the time he got here back in 1975.
Well, when I first came, it was, I don't know if you'd call it a format. It was just sort of like a mom-and-pop radio station that was run by two teachers from the school district. Three, actually. One was the chief engineer, and then there were a program director and the station manager.
But it was a start. Alan's interest and involvement in the community grew with the station. He began hosting performing arts specials, which became open air. He started relationships with the Berkeley Symphony and SF Performances. He launched a weekly AIDS update, which would be absorbed into Out in the Bay. He saw KALW create an award-winning call-in show in the local news department.
And it's become a station that nobody ever heard of to a station that really has made a place for itself in the scene, an important, indispensable place, I think.
In that interview we heard a bit from earlier, Neil Swinkles asked Alan what he was proud of. Alan was bemused by the question.
Gosh, I never thought of it in those terms.
But after thinking about it, Alan Farley said this.
Well, one thing right now is just keeping some coverage of the arts, because it's been decreasing everywhere in the daily papers and the other broadcast media. We're still doing that coverage here. And I would say the work with the Noel Coward Estate, too. I'm proud of that.
didn't really contribute much to Richard Pryor's success.
Oh, yeah. Alan was Richard Pryor's road manager for a year. And he was chairman of the math department at Morehouse College. He was a Renaissance man before he found his calling on the air.
I was never trained how to speak on the radio, how to be a presence on the radio. When I first was on, I simply was shown how to run the controls. And it's just my own natural sense of what I expect somebody to say. I don't create a personality. I don't create a different voice for the radio, or I don't have a different name. I know there are a lot of people in the business who do. But I'm just... what you hear is what I am.
Beautiful music moved Alan Farley. So did good theater, storytelling, and baseball. Alan had season tickets to the San Francisco Giants, and once in a while he'd share them with me. Up until a few years ago, he was one of those long-suffering fans. And then the team had that unexpected season of torture.
It was just gut-wrenching.
The good kind.
Incredible.
The kind where they win their first title in more than 50 years.
And I was trying to drink in every moment of it.
When our news department made a documentary about the Giants' World Series campaign, we made sure that Alan had a starring role. His honest, ever-present emotion came right to the surface.
I couldn't believe it. It finally happened. Oh, I'm just getting choked up to think about it.
Alan passed away the morning of Sunday, October 21st. It's worth noting that a lot of people who gathered to mourn his loss here at the station the next day, they said they hoped the Giants would win a game for Alan Farley. Well, they did. They won every single game until they won it all.
Everything went right. It had to happen. It was just destined to happen.
It's hard for us not to think that he had something to do with it.
World champion San Francisco Giants.
A few weeks before he passed away, I visited Alan at his home, so one-bedroom apartment in San Francisco's Western Addition. He was sitting back in a recliner next to a stereo system with a classical music CD right on there. To his other side, an entire wall of books stretched from floor to ceiling. It was as if literature was wallpapering his room. A TV remote control sat beside him, and I thought when he pressed that on button a few hours later, the San Francisco Giants game was going to flicker right on and give him a few more hours of engagement. We talked for a while, Alan and me, maybe 45 minutes. I asked him about that thing I just couldn't quite place. What was it about Noel Coward that turned him on so much? He looked at me, surprised, as if it weren't obvious. He was so talented, he said. The music, the stories, the poems, the culture. So rich. He just reflected the good things in life, he said. I can see it now. Noel Coward had those beautiful qualities. So did Alan Farley.
When the storm clouds are riding through a winter sky, sail away, sail away. When the love light is fading in your sweetheart's eye, sail away, sail away. When you feel your song is orchestrated wrong, why should you prolong your stay? When the wind and the weather blow your dreams sky high, sail away, sail away, sail away. When a sailor goes to sea, though he leaves his love behind, time and tide will set him free from the grief inside him. Sea and sky will ease his heart, regulate his troubled mind. Every sailor has a chart and a star to guide him home. When your life seems too difficult to rise above, sail away, sail away.
When your heart feels as dreary as a worn-out glove, sail away, sail away. But when soon or late you recognize your fate, that will be your great, great day. On the wings of the morning, with your own true love, sail away, sail away, sail away.
Happy sailing, Alan Farley. And thank you, Ben Trefney, for that extraordinary tribute. It's nice to hear the master's distinctive voice again, both Alan and Noel Coward. If you'd like to hear that very tribute again, tune in today to Cross Currents at 5 o'clock, and then later tonight we'll have it posted at our website, kalw.org. Good afternoon, I'm David LaTulipe, and during this special edition of Open Air, I've invited some friends of Alan's that were longtime collaborators with him, Diane Keough, Ronald Chase, and Peter Robinson. Welcome once again to the studios.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hi, David. Good to be here.
Diane, I'd like to start with you to talk a little bit about your association with Alan. You came to KALW later in the equation than the gentlemen we'll be talking with later that have decades and decades of memories to share about Alan. Tell us your first association with Alan at KALW.
Oh, my first associate. Well, first of all, it was 12 years ago that I came here. And I had an introduction to the important staff members when I came. There was no general manager. There was no staff at all to speak of. So I was introduced to Alan and Joe and Joanne in the meeting room. And Alan just sat there, looked at me, nodded his head, said hello. Well, time went on, and he wasn't very friendly as long as I was here. Oh, 3, 4, 5 months. And all of a sudden, he started talking to me. And I finally asked him about 8 years later, I said, why weren't you nice to me at that first meeting? Why didn't he said, well, nobody else has hung around, so I figured you wouldn't either, and I wasn't going to waste my time. And so that's how I met him, and that's how we became friends, and we became really great friends. And I had one story to tell. Alan took me to so many things, and I loved going to openings with him. It was just such great fun. And a lot of plays came, and he was invited to. Well, he was invited to one called Menopause the Musical. So he came to me, and he said, here's the package. Go, why don't you go see it? He had no interest in going to see or even discussing it. And so I went to see it, and it was funny, and the people were good. So I came back to Alan, and I said, wouldn't you like to interview them? He said, absolutely not, but you can. And I said, really? He said, yes, you can. And so the first time that I had interviewed people in 40 years, I used to have a television show where I interviewed them, he let me come in and interview on his time, live on the air. I sat in the other studio and watched his face and watched his hands. He timed it out, and it was great fun. And for him to allow me to do that on his show, to interview somebody else, I thought was absolutely terrific. And afterwards, he said, good job.
One of my memories of the two of you together here at KLW is that he would often use your little cubby as a perching place after he would plop himself down after interviewing P.D. James or Mike Wallace or Donald Runicles, and just you could see him beaming across the cubicle and sharing with you what he just experienced
he
in
loved
this
it.
Very
well,
studio.
I had a chair. It was a special. It was Alan's chair. Everybody knew that came in here. It was Alan's chair, and they were not to sit in it because if at any time he wanted it, he got it. And I loved sharing the stories with him. It was just so great. We'd come in and talk about so many things, about what he had just heard, what he was going to do. Was this a good idea? And then later on, I'll talk to you about some other things.
Sure. I'm kind of jealous of that chair. It's like he always bypassed my little cubbyhole and went right to yours.
I know. Oh, well. Everybody said that.
Ronald Chase, you have a very long memory time.
I'm not too sure that I remember much, but it goes back so far. It was in the late 70s that I think Alan came to a party at my studio. We had very, very large parties for maybe 100, 200 people. And
your studio, I'm sorry, could you just introduce yourself?
My painting studio. Sure. That basically I had a studio on the Embarcadero. And then I had a studio. I think that was the period that I had a studio at 11th and Folsom. We had a five-story tower. And we had these breakfasts at Christmas, which I think Alan came to for the first time. And he then gave me a call, and he said, would you be at all interested in, you know, maybe volunteering on a program that we were thinking about creating? I really don't know what year that was, but it was the first time that he did open air. And he said, I would like to talk about some of the art. And I thought maybe it'd be nice to have you in and talk about it. And that's when we started. It was every week. And I remember that we struggled a lot with figuring out some kind of format that we should we talk about painting? Should we talk about films? What should we talk about? And it was during the 80s that really sort of took off. We even had a period in the 80s where I sort of mentioned that there was no gallery guide in San Francisco, so why didn't we try one with KLW? So we published a little gallery guide, had people, you know, sort of coming in and calling in about that. It was so strange because, of course, KLW kept changing all the time because it had an earthquake. It first had to move in after the earthquake. It moved into a building on Harrison Street that was quite rough. I mean, he was very unhappy. It was not really the quality that, you know, he wanted to have in the studio. We were kind of pushed into the second floor of a school building. We moved to this strange little hut that was – it was a little house that was out beyond 3rd Street by the – where the water came in. And it was like by a huge sort of factory that ground up rock. And so there were piles and piles of gravel as, you know, literally high. And you would drive out there. I kept thinking I was in some film noir. But it was very cozy and very efficient, and Alan kept saying, well, this is only a substitute. They're certainly going to find something else. We don't have to stay out here forever.
Well, Ronald, you inspired me to not complain about the studios here anymore.
The thing is, when finally we moved here, I mean, Alan just said, well, Don, this is really the way that, you know, the radio should be. I mean, this is the way we should operate. And I think the school system certainly was very good about doing that. And I think Alan, what I'd like to say about Alan is that Alan, I don't have any colorful stories about Alan because Alan was incredibly even. Even when he got upset, he was very low-keyed, and he loved his trips to England. He loved finally developing into an authority on Noel Coward. And I would tease him about it because, of course, I really would also mention that when he and Peter got together, they sounded awfully fuddy-duddy because they all sounded like the English contingent of the Noel Coward Club. But we would have a few disagreements about, you know, modern work versus the kinds of traditional work that they really loved so much. And I think that gave, you know, all those programs a little bit of personality. I saw him constantly because he was always at the symphony, and I would run into him because I take a group of teenagers often, and we would always see each other at the symphony and talk about the program coming up. In the recent years, I basically just wanted to come in every now and then, and so I didn't see him so often. Mm-hmm. But it was always such a joy to see Peter and, you know, to really talk about what was going on in San Francisco.
Right. Well, thanks for sharing that. It's some very colorful memories nonetheless. You mentioned travel, and before we transition to Peter Robinson, it reminds me of a Noel Coward tune, and I'm sure Peter will be sharing more about a Noel Coward and Alan's obsession with him.
But why, oh, why do the wrong people travel when the right people stay back home and mind their business when the right people stay back home with Cinerama when the right people stay back home? I'm merely asking why the right people stay back home.
That's the great Elaine Stritch from the original soundtrack of Sail Away by Noel Coward. Elaine Stritch was a guest here on Open Air. We have a photo of her in our lobby here one time when she was up at the Raz Room, I believe. Alan, very proud of talking with Elaine, not only about Noel Coward, but the very irascible Elaine Stritch. Peter Robinson, thanks for coming into today's edition of Open Air.
Yeah, hi, David. Good to be here.
How about a little bit about the Noel Coward connection?
I just want to clear the fuddy-duddy that Ronald has called me, because I'm an enlightened fuddy-duddy. And certainly we shared, Alan and I, a great love of Noel Coward. That number, you know, Why Do the Wrong People Travel, I think was one of his favorites. But I first, too, started out at Harrison Street. Book Talk was just getting underway. And I think it's strange to say this as a broadcaster, but Alan was also a great listener. And when you're doing a program like Book Talk and you've got an author, people may have read the book, but they also want to get some insights or some background on the person who wrote the book. And I think one of his gifts when interviewing these authors was the ability to let them talk. I make the contrast, if ever you've seen Chris Matthews, you wonder why he ever needs a panel, you know, because to me that is uninterrupted blurb. So I remember one time bringing David Ignatius up here, who was a Washington Post foreign correspondent and has written a number of spy stories, particularly based in the Middle East on Iraq. And I think he revealed more to Alan about how the spy networks operate out of Washington, how the CIA operates, all under the guise of talking about his latest novel. And I attribute that essentially to this great gift of listening. I also appeared on another show of his, My Favorite Things, which is actually based on a original British program called Desert Island Disc with Roy Plumley. And again, if you think about it, you've got someone choosing 8 or 9 of their favorite recordings, whether it's classical, popular, or whatever. But again, you're discovering things about the person you're interviewing. And that, too, is an introduction in a way I think KLW is really good at, of bringing communities together, because people would come on this program from the world of music, from the world of theater, from the world of books. And all these, in a true sense, Alan was a Renaissance person. His interests extended from baseball to Mahler and beyond. So appearing on Book Talk, I'd chosen one piece by Country Joe Fish.
My Favorite Things.
It was about Vietnam.
On My Favorite Things, you mean.
And I think about it because Alan had actually appeared on a concert with him back in the 60s. And suddenly you're learning more about a person who in many ways was quite private and quite quiet. So I found it a interesting get-together. And then Ronald mentioned London. He was a great theatre-goer. He enjoyed his trips to London. And we actually did a couple of cabaret clubs on the King's Road at one point. And satire was another of his loves. Flanders and Swann is a good example of satire from the 60s that he would listen to. And I think it also brings us back to what you asked about originally, Noel Coward. Noel Coward, that master of words, master of poetry, and that little episode, the Noel Coward interlude, which used to come after My Word and before My Music.
It still does, by the way, and in between My Word and Music.
Yeah, so it's another example of how you can interject something which is an ideal bridge for two favorite old-time British panel programs.
I'd just like to mention that at one point, Alan was asked in London to actually be a main speaker at one of the Noel Coward events, and he was so excited about that. That really made him incredibly proud. And every time he went in the last few years, he was a featured personage in all of the Noel Coward events. He was always given seats. He was always really treated really well. And that also really made him very excited when he came home.
Sure. And Peter, you mentioned the Desert Island Discs for My Favorite Things, on which the show was based. Alan actually got a big kick out of recreating the Desert Island Discs where Noel Coward was being interviewed.
They recreated
the very program of Desert Island Discs with
And just
with
to
Noel
pick
Coward.
Up on what Ronald was saying, it'd be about 5 years ago when the letters of Noel Coward came out, he did a review. I edit San Francisco Books and Travel, and I think his insights were many ways different to some of the British reviewers, because he had listened to the music, he'd studied the plays, often when Private Lives or other card plays were running either at ACT or out in Arinda, he would be there. And sometimes the dramaturge would actually ask Alan about little sections of those plays, how should they or how would they be interpreted. So to have someone, if you like, miles from London, so to speak, who had these type of insights to, again, one of the great performers and great playwrights of the 20th century. In fact, Card's plays are still regularly produced on the circuit here in this country and in the UK. So we were fortunate at KLW to have that type of connection. And he actually put on at the Plush Rooms, one of his hangouts in the old days before the Plush Room closed, a special Noel Card evening. And we had a celebration. I don't know which birthday it would have been. I know Cow died in 1973, so this may have been a 20-year anniversary.
Very lovely. Now, tell me if it's appropriate for radio when you guys first met and where.
mine would be about 1989, and I'd sent in a short book review. Michael Johnson was working with Alan in those days, and I'd created a program which primarily had to do with words, how different aspects of the language changed and saw our views of society. And they started using this on what was like a pre-run of Open Air. Open Air was on, but they had a kind of intro at the beginning. So I'm going back now to 1989, and almost after that, every other week, one way or the other, we were together, either on Book Talk or particularly on this program here, Open Air. And Ronald was also part of that duo at the time.
Sure.
I have something else to add to that. It was interesting. Sometimes we had nothing to talk about on Open Air. Neither of us had gone anywhere. And Alan would say, well, Ronald, talk about something. I'm sure you can fill in 45 minutes without even breathing. And so I would just start talking. And it's where I developed a certain kind of Spain style about being able to talk.
It always helps when you've seen the play or heard the show or read the book.
But or, you
that's
know,
when your creativity
at least try
gets
to talk
best.
About something that was going on, and we sort of just ad-libbed through. Alan hardly ever had any notes, and he spoke quite spontaneously about theater. He would have a pile of things that he had seen when he came back from London, and he would sort of flip through them saying, this was dreadful, this was really terrific, you should have seen this, this was awful, and then I won't talk about that. And so he would lay them all out in front of him, and I would, you know, be laughing because there were far too many things to talk about. He would have seen at least 23, maybe 30 productions in London in his maybe week and a half or 2 weeks. He was going in the matinee and to the evening almost every day. So it was like he was really doing his homework.
Yeah. I also welcome to the studio now Lewis Dorsey, who is a dear friend of Alan Farley's and was with Alan in the very last moments of his life.
You're making me think about Alan and I in Canada. We went to the Shaw Film Festival. I think Alan's about 10 years older than I am. I'm not sure. I forget. We always could not remember when we met and how old we are. But I went to the Shaw Film Festival with Alan. We saw three plays a day. 7 days nonstop. We were in Canada for 8 days, and in those 8 days, we did it all. There was a special tribute to Noel Coward, and I think there were about seven or eight plays. We saw all of them. Alan scheduled everyone. It was wonderful.
And just to add, both Oscar Wilde and Bernard Shaw were plays regularly produced here, and particularly The Ideal Husband's one I remember, and Alan and I had been there. And I remember beginning saying, I'm not wild about Shaw, but I'm sure about Wilde. And I was just beginning
good
to
for you. Oh, that's
think
very nice.
About the old sense of wordplay. Alan was interested, I think, in poetry as well as literature.
Oh, sure. And he was a punster too. When I came in with a pun, he would give me a broad smile, and he'd remember it throughout the day. That's for sure.
Yeah, and I think that too is something which I really respect radio for, because you can read poetry on the page, and then you can hear poetry through your ears. And I think that's a medium that, when we come back to Alan as a broadcaster, and that gift of listening, is that he knew when to speak, when to listen, and when it came to poetry, he gave it exposure.
That's Peter Robinson, a longtime friend and collaborator of Alan Farley, also speaking with Ronald Chase, who was on open air for many years in various stations of KALW's life, and Diane Keough is our former development director, who had his chair next to Alan's, and Alan would share a lot of what was going on in his daily life. Louis Dorsey, a dear friend of Alan's, also in the studio. I'm David LaTulipe, and you are listening to Open Air here on KALW. I'd like to share a little bit of Alan's generosity with everyone. As you all know, he was an extraordinarily generous man in so many ways, of not only time, but of his money. He contributed to many worthy causes, including some musical causes. And one of the things that he did regarding Noel Coward was commission a trio of a suite of music from Sail Away. It was a tribute to Graham Payne, music of Noel Coward. And the Volkert Ellis Trio was the recipient of this particular commission, Mark Volkert of the San Francisco Symphony. So I thought I'd share just a little bit of that trio. It's unpublished in terms of music at this point, but it is available on CD. This is Sail Away, which was from not only the musical Sail Away, but from the musical Ace of Clubs, in an arrangement by violinist Mark Volkert of the San Francisco Symphony. The Volkert Ellis Trio, which is Mark Volkert on violin, Jan Volkert on cello, and Nancy Ellis Viola, with an excerpt from Sail Away, a tribute to Graham Payne. Music by Noel Coward. The trio commissioned by our late, great senior announcer here at KALW, Alan Farley. Peter Thompson, Peter Robinson has some other memories of Alan and other British connections.
Yeah, I think in the old days of Masterpiece Theatre, I mean, it doesn't seem so old now, they were introduced by Alistair Cook, who also actually continued on this particular station doing Letter from America. The other stations had dropped it around this country, and it's quite an informative update on what had been happening that week in history or politics.
I remember those when I first became involved with KLW, hearing those Letters from America.
And,
sure.
Alistair Cook was a favorite, and indeed Masterpiece Theatre was something that Alan did participate actively in and then talk about. I mentioned briefly my favorite things. I actually used the intro to Masterpiece Theatre when the little man used to walk up the ladder. I always hoped he'd fall off as one of my choices. But he liked Inspector Moores, and I think that particular detective series had a detective who listened to a little bit of opera on the side. So there was a sort of musical connection in between solving crimes. And then because Moores operated out of Oxford, you had that historic setting of the colleges and the buildings. And I think as an Anglophile, I would say Alan felt as much at home in the UK as he did here at a ball game in San Francisco. It sounds a strange comparison because we play cricket, but that was something that he did follow on television, and whether it was Cook introducing it then later as the program changed, that was a favorite of his, and he certainly had insights on how it went.
Well, I hate to disappoint open-air listeners of the future, but I'm afraid my interests are not going to be lying so much on the baseball front, I'm afraid. Maybe tennis. Maybe I'll have a tennis segment. I'm more a tennis kind of guy. We'll see
who's
about
that. Who's tennis?
Maybe we could have a section where we just listen to the tennis ball. Maybe that would be an interesting way of introducing the sport.
Peter, you mentioned mysteries. He was a great fan of the mystery books that would come into KLW via the various publishers. Diane, I think you remember helping him sort through some of those.
Well, oh, yes. Diane helped on P.D. James. That was one of his favorites.
Oh, yes. She was so adorable when she came here to the station and Alan interviewed. She just looked, she came in with that little handbag hanging over her arm, and she was perky as all get out, and she reminded me of a very softer, more delightful Queen of England when she was here, and Alan was so thrilled to have her. And yeah, P.D. James was known, and another one that he came to love recently was Lee Child and Jack Reacher. He would have been appalled to think of who was going to be playing him in the movies, and I am too. It just isn't going to work. But a lot of times he would get books. He had so many books that he couldn't possibly begin to read, and he'd find one that was going to be coming on tour he had never heard of, and he'd say, would you read this? Because he did not like a book that was not well written. Even if it had a great story, if it wasn't well written, it wasn't for Alan. So I would read it, and I would say, yes, I think you would like to do this. And then he would start to read. And one of the things that was so interesting about him, from all of the people that came in to hype their books with him, was they said, he really read the book. They don't usually do that. He really read the book, and he didn't ask those same questions that I get asked all the time. And I said, yeah, he really read the book. He couldn't fake it. His questions to the authors, as you had mentioned earlier, were so deep and so interesting. And as you said, and you both said earlier, Alan listened because I watched him do these interviews, and I'd say, I've got to learn how to do what he does. And so I said, how do you do that, Alan? And he said, I listen.
Right.
And that was exactly what he did. He listened, and he brought out the most interesting things about authors, artists. It didn't matter who it was. He brought out the fact that during a play of Peter Pan that was here a couple of years ago, that Captain Hook and the father were played by the same man, and what they used to do was run back in between sets and play Scrabble. Now, who would ever know that about somebody that was in the theater? But those are the kinds of interesting things that Alan brought out. I want to tell you about one other thing quickly. Before I met Alan, before I came here, I would be in the car every Thursday and a lot of other days at 1 o'clock, going to visit my mother who was elsewhere. And I tuned in to KALW, of which I had never heard, by the way, and I tuned in to the 1 o'clock show. And I would hear the two of you talking and discussing theater, and I absolutely loved it. And I loved Alan, and I loved listening to it. And nobody else that I knew was listening to this kind of stuff. Everybody else was listening, I don't know what. But I really and thoroughly enjoyed it so much because I learned so much about theater in the area and about, excuse me, about symphony and ballet and books and travel. It was a wonderful show, and it wasn't any place else on the dial. And to my knowledge, it still isn't.
Let me mention once again that we are in the planning stages of a tribute to Alan for on the public side. It will take place on Monday, November 19th in the Green Room of the Veterans Building on Van Ness, where the Herbst Theater is located. In addition to Mike Greensill and Weslow Whitfield, pianist Sarah Cahill, I'll be playing some flute, trumpeter and producer Eric Wayne will be on hand to offer a set or two of some music. There'll be some treats, both liquid and solid, courtesy of some caterers locally. It's a free event for the public as a celebration of Alan, Monday, November 19th. I'm pleased to report that the RSVP form is now online at kalw.org, or if you're not computer savvy and you'd like to indicate that you are coming to the celebration on the 19th, you can call 841-4121-3515. Again, all the information at our website, kalw.org.
So I'd like to add a little bit about how that particular style that she talked about developed. We decided in the early sort of 80s that one of the things that was missing from radio was a kind of spontaneous discussion. And we decided that neither one of us would take notes and that we would basically just have the subject and then we would just start talking and that we would try to make it as friendly and as exchange-oriented as possible.
Oh,
and
I think that is a conscious decision, then. I see.
The thing that we brought to radio in the 80s is because people would always tell us that. They would say, it was just like we were sitting down and watching and listening to you talk anywhere. And I felt that that was sort of the special quality that we were doing. And Alan especially loved it when we went to the same things. And especially at the symphony, we would be able to, he would mention some things, I would disagree with him, he would disagree with me. And he loved those moments because they really did let you understand that two different people can have very different ideas about the same subject. One of the things that he didn't, however, deal with much was films. I was always curious. He really didn't go to movies very much. And so I would basically be the person talking about films. And every now and then, I would maybe every 6 months, he would say, oh, I've seen a film, and then we could talk about that film together. But most of the time he'd go, no, I saw something on television that I liked. He liked Masterpiece Theater, some of the things on television that he saw. But he really didn't regularly go to films. I don't think he had time. He was so busy going to theater, ballet, and the symphony.
So I just want to pick up on Ronald about having disagreements, because I always believed if two people agree, one of them is superfluous. And when
okay,
Ronald
well,
and I get together,
point.
I know I'm not superfluous. But Diane mentioned travel, and Alan would fly on British Airways to London, and we would often, on this things, agree. The first complaint was about leg space. Alan was reasonably tall, so we did have our leg space, but he would stay in Covent Garden, a nice hotel in Covent Garden, and then walk to the theatre. And he is a person who I think often liked to discover a city on his feet, because he was going to museums, he was going to art galleries, of course he was going to Covent Garden, he was going to symphony, but I think he had that sense of history where buildings can talk, buildings can speak to you. And I know I've always felt that London itself is a great walking city, and I still remember coming back, as he did on one trip, and there'd been a poster for British Airways saying lunch in London, breakfast in London, lunch in New York, to which Alan added baggage in Bermuda.
Some wonderful memories there. Diane had one other thought.
Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about the most recent television shows. He and I would watch them and compare our notes about them. He really did like to see the Sunday night shows on BBC, and particularly the newest one, that Downton Abbey. He was thrilled with that, as I was. And I was wondering, Lewis, did he get a chance to talk to you about that new film, that's the new show that's on Thursday nights with Sherlock Holmes, because that was one of the newer ones that had come on, and I don't know if he saw it, and I was so anxious to find out whether he liked it. I thought he might.
This is Lewis Dorsey, Alan's dear friend, who spent many hours with him, both culturally and in the last days of his life.
Actually, he did.
Oh, good.
He did see it, and for me, it was painful, because I am zero television person. But I had to sit through it because I spent the last about 2 or 3 months over to his apartment with him. Mm-hmm. And he watched television, which always was a surprise to me, and I didn't particularly like television. But we sat with it. And I think he liked it. He didn't express his desire to me.
Well, if he didn't express his dislike, then he probably liked it.
Yes,
because he was
because he would say things he didn't
yes,
like.
Yes, he would.
The thing I want to add before we leave this show today is his last days at my house. Because once I made the decision to move Alan to my house, we had discussed it for quite a long time, and I wasn't sure he was ready. But once he was ready, he made me feel comfortable and certainly made me understand that it was a move he was going to do. So I wanted that room where he was going to be Alan's room. And I looked where he lived, and I thought, I'm going to bring things over for him. He had a small picture of Noel and Gertie on his at the foot of his bed. So I brought it over and I put it at the foot of his bed. And I hadn't realized, but in 1992, Alan and I went to London to see a play, Noel and Gertie. And a woman named Joan Hirst was the last living person that I remember that was a secretary to Noel Coward that I knew personally. And she invited us to this play. And I had framed this poster in that bedroom, which I didn't take down out of that room. So when Alan came to the room to live there, he looked across the room and looked at that poster, which was there just by, you know, just by happenstance. And he looked at that picture and he says, "Where did you get that from?" And I said, "I'll show," you know, and I recalled the show to him. He gave me such a wonderful stare and look. It made me so happy because I know that bringing him from his own personal home to somewhere that wasn't his personal home, I want him to be happy, and I want him to be comfortable. And I don't know if I did that or not, but I think I did.
I think you did, too.
I'm sure you did, Lewis. Yeah, thank you so much for your time with him.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that you were involved in I know Fred was involved in his holiday celebrations.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
And he would tell me, he would, at the beginning of the holiday season, he said, "Well, I started it last night. I got out the Christmas lights and put them around the window, and I sat down at the table, and I had my glass of brandy," and that's exactly what he would do, and he would write out his Christmas cards, and that's the way he did it.
Well, those of us who know Alan in his personal life and went to his home knew he had Christmas lights on all the time, year-round. Mm-hmm. And when I moved him to my house, I did that. I put Christmas lights in his bedroom. Fred is not speaking on the radio, but Fred could tell you I did everything I could try to think of to make him feel comfortable when he came over there.
I'm sure that he did.
And the people who know him personally who listen to my voice right now will recognize that I knew Alan very well.
Yes.
Alan and I could look at each other from across the room, and that thought process was there. We had connected. I knew when to keep my mouth shut, and I knew when to open my mouth. He was wonderful. In the last show we did about Alan, I said to Rose Aguilar, "I love you, Alan Farley."
Yeah, I heard that.
I want to say those words again today. I love you, Alan Farley.
It's very sweet. Thank you so much, Lewis. You'll be instrumental in planning the very public event we will have on Monday, November 19th, celebrating the life of Alan Farley at the Green Room of the Veterans Building where the Herbst Theater is located. That's Monday, November 19th. You can RSVP at kalw.org. Some wonderful musical guests lined up and lots of memories, more memories to share. You can also call 415-841-4121, extension 3515. Ronald Chase, thank you very much. Diane Keough, for your memories. Peter Robinson, we'll be seeing you soon once again on Open Air. And Lewis Dorsey, so much to thank you for.
Thank you.
In addition to this celebration on the 19th, on Friday, November 16th at 10 o'clock on VoiceBox, host Chloe Veltman will pay tribute to Alan by revisiting a show that she recorded with Alan in March of 2011 about the songs of 1941. The program was produced to mark KALW's 70th anniversary. Once again, that's Friday, November 16th at 10 p.m. for VoiceBox. The public celebration of Alan's life, Monday, November 19th. All the details at our website, kalw.org. And tune in today at 5 for Cross Currents, where you can hear once again that wonderful tribute melange that our news producer, Ben Trefney, put together. And be sure to join me, David LaTulipe, for the next three Monday evenings at 9 p.m. for Explorations in Music, a series for which Alan was originating producer and host. In this seventh season of collaborations with the Alexander String Quartet and historian Robert Greenberg, again, Alan's so instrumental in getting these collaborations going, we're exploring the life and music of Franz Schubert, and the series ends on November 19th, so be sure to catch these next few weeks. Well, let's close with those very good friends of KALW and of Alan's, Mike Greensill and Wesley Whitfield. They will be performing at the tribute on the 19th. They've also got a run at the Raz Room from November 11th to 21st. More information at therazroom.com, therazroom.com. This one's for Alan. For Open Air, I'm David LaTulipe.
We may never meet again. Before you go, make this moment sweet again. We won't say
Wesley Whitfield with pianist Mike Greensill for All We Know. Wesley and Mike will be appearing for the special Alan Farley celebration on Monday, the 19th of November. More information at our website, kalw.org.